And welcome to another edition of River Valley Rhythms. You're tuned to WESU in Middletown. We are at 88.1 FM, and we stream at WESUFM.org. I'm the host of River Valley Rhythms, Steve Allison, and I'm glad to have you with us today. And in Studio B with me today is Laszlo Gardoni, who is a great jazz pianist, Hungarian by birth, but a Boston resident now. And he's performing this coming Saturday at the Buttonwood Tree here in Middletown. That's a 8 o'clock show, is it not, Laszlo?
Yes.
Yes. And this is at least a second appearance, is it not, to the Buttonwood?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Back in the day, and back in the old days of the Buttonwood Tree on Rapallo Avenue, I had the good fortune of having Laszlo at the Buttonwood Tree for a performance, and I think you're right. I think it was sometime in the early 90s.
Yes, yes, and I remember it very fondly myself.
Yeah, and since that time, you were in Boston then. You're still there now.
Yeah.
And you've got a regular position now at the Berklee School of Music.
Yes, right? That's right. I'm a professor of piano at Berklee College.
That's very nice.
And also I am kind of the...
The performance guy, right?
Yeah, the performance major's advisor, and also I produce concerts for these wonderful, talented performance majors.
There. And that's very nice. Yeah,
yeah.
So, how long have you been doing that?
The producing is for about 5 years.
Yeah,
and I actually started teaching right after I graduated from there, but very part time, you know.
Right.
So in the late 80s.
Yeah.
And then as things progressed, you know, I advanced in the corporate ladder.
Became part of the, yes, the full-time faculty.
And I'm a full-time faculty for years now. And fortunately, I teach very good students, and it's one-on-one piano instruction.
Oh, it
so
is?
So, of course, that is making my schedule very flexible. So I'm able to tour here and in Europe.
And I would think much more effective, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, for students of that caliber who basically want a good, inspiring piano teacher and a mentor in for their compositions, it's nice to know that I am myself doing what I'm teaching.
I think it's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you been, you mentioned it gives you the flexibility. Have you been doing a lot of touring?
You know, as it is a lot of concerts, but not necessarily a
great
tour.
Range. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So we have concerts all over New England. We have actually 13 concerts lined up for the next 2 months.
Oh, you
until
do?
Until like November 2nd. That's the last one of this stretch. There are 13 concerts.
Oh, so that's that is a busy schedule.
It's a busy schedule, and it takes me to New England, and then later we're going to go to New York also in December. This is. I usually make sure that when a new album comes out, we have a nice tour attached to it. I call it tour, even though, as I said, the gigs are scattered. But.
Yeah, but they're in the area, and it's kind of it's more focused than it would be otherwise.
Right, and then, if I go over to Europe, I used to play a lot in Scandinavia, and also obviously in Hungary and Germany.
Yeah.
Then that's a tour, of course. You can just go there for one
game. Now, how often do you get to do that?
I don't do it as much as I used to. I'm not as interested in it, frankly. I'm very happy with the music scene here.
Yeah.
I feel I have very inspiring partners to work with. And I don't want to go over there and have to play with pickup bands, which is often the reality of things.
Yeah, just because of the cost.
Exactly.
Involved, right?
I mean, I have this band together for 9 years, almost 10, with Yoran Israel on drums and John Lockwood on bass. You know, and we are very, very close musically, and we just read each other's mind. And I think that was always important for me.
For the music to be right, that's very critical. So that's nice. You guys have been together for that time. And we had talked about, I know I brought it up, that you're on Sunnyside, the label. And that is, I remember back in the, I guess it was in the 80s when that label began, and how it was and still continues to be an audiophile label. He's the gentleman who started it. It was very, First of all, he had a very good ear, and he would do a lot of his recordings in, I guess his studio was more like his house. I can't recall the particulars, but he had great attention to detail and didn't do a lot of fancy stuff. He just basically worked with the mics and the musicians, so it was a real clean sound.
Yeah,
and it's nice that you've been with them so many years.
Oh, I'm very fortunate that way because you know, François, the founder, has a keen ear for pianists. You know, great pianists are on that label, like Kenny Werner, Fred Hirsch, Dave Kikoski, a lot of people. Joe Zavin will put out a very special project. So François is really able to pick quality piano music. Right. So it's an honor to be on a label. Besides, the label got voted number one by Downbeat magazine this year as the number one jazz label.
It was.
And when I started
out here,
it's nice to see that growth over the years. I met him first when, as you said, it was just at the beginning.
That's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a good relationship that's developed over the years.
Absolutely. And I'm in the position now that, you know, this is my ninth album and the fifth with them.
Okay.
And I'm in the position that basically I have total artistic control, which I actually always did with him, but in a sense also that I choose where I record and, you know, all the details.
So some of the has changed.
I always had the music control over the music, but it's nice to know that he trusts me with the details and I just deliver the...
So the relationships developed
in this case,
well.
The disc.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Started with delivering tapes back in the '80s.
In the old days. And I know I asked you this in the past, but not here at WESU, so the listeners may not be aware. How you got started with the piano. And how you came to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a nice story even now to remember. You know, it's something I always enjoy talking about because I never remember starting on the piano.
Really?
Yeah, we always ask each other, okay, so when did you start? I can't answer that question.
Wow.
But I have photos of me crawling around it when I was an infant and playing it when I was three. And I don't remember that picture being taken.
Really?
So I was always at the piano. It was always a very strong connection, and I would play 3 hours a day, but improvise mostly. I mean, obviously, I took classical lessons, then I went to the conservatory, so I would practice those pieces.
Yes.
But my genuine connection to the instrument was through improvisation.
Oh. And was your family musically oriented? You must have had a piano in the home.
Yes, obviously. It was a piano in the home, but... It just came with the furniture.
I had a piano in my home, and it was kind of like that. My parents always wanted us to play, but none of us picked up the instrument.
My father was a talented person, musically talented person, but he never pursued it. He could play a lot of multitude of instruments a little bit. But, you know, never learned to play them well. But it's kind of nice to have that in the house, not like an over... powering presence of
it was there if you wanted it.
But he was there when I wanted to jam with him, you know. He
would
pick up
the
banjo or whatever, accordion, saxophone, whatever. He played a bunch of things.
That's great. So you had a band there.
Yeah, I did.
And your dad.
Right.
That's very good. So when did you come to the States?
And then what happened as I finished the conservatory, it did have a jazz department, and I was very active in the jazz department. African music, we also studied there. So on the last concert of my being a student there, the most prominent Hungarian jazz drummer came in and said, I heard you play before, you are in my band. The next week we play in Germany. And in September, which was a couple of months later, we're going to open for Jack DeJohnette's band.
Really?
In Austria at the major festival, the Saalfelden Festival.
Wow.
So I was... thrown into the middle of it.
That's amazing.
And one of the players I got a chance to play even that early was Jack Gregg, who is a wonderful American bass player. Used to work with Cameron Brown. He was part of Jack DeJohnette's first band, Compose. That was the name of the band. And then a saxophone player, Sulaiman Hakim, who worked with Max Roach. So I did have good partners and a lot of opportunity to play.
That's great.
Because, you know, Europe in at that time
that was plenty of alive. Yeah.
Right.
And very supportive. The government's very supportive.
Right. They love the music and they love the whole idea of the music.
Right.
Now, of course, regardless of that, I was hurting for more opportunities. So I decided to try for Berkeley. And in 83, I got an answer that they would give me a small college scholarship, which wasn't enough to come here and study. But I decided to come anyway and see if I can get a full scholarship, because at that point that was the only way to do it.
Oh, so you were going to work your way into it then?
Yeah. I didn't give a maybe an answer. I couldn't say no. It wasn't a no. It was a maybe, but I didn't take a maybe for an answer. So I came, auditioned, played for them, did the exams, and I got a full scholarship, including housing and accommodations.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And then I finished in 2 years. Obviously, I had a good background, both as a performer and also as a graduate of the conservatory, Béla Bartók Conservatory. And then right away, I hooked up with Miroslav Vítus, great bass player, you know, who lived in Boston at the time because he was the head of the jazz department at NEC, New England Conservatory. And he liked my playing. So without actually having a master plan, although probably in the back of my mind I did, I asked him to go to the plan. Let's go to the studio and record what we've been doing at various clubs around Boston. And then we went to the studio. We did 7 hours live two-track recording. No mixing was necessary afterwards.
Nice.
And I sent it around, and that's how I got my first record deal on Antilles Records, which was also wonderful.
Another
label.
Great label, yeah.
Yeah, and I recorded the first album with him. And I mean, that recording, became the first album.
Yeah.
And then he moved to Europe, so fortunately Dave Holland took his place in Boston at NEC, got to meet him, hit it off, so he was on my second album. So
wow, very nice. Things kind of fall in place, don't they, in your career here?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
And of course,
You earn it, too, because of your playing. I mean,
there were times, of course, when it was very hard, obviously. At the beginning, you don't have money, you don't really have your status in this country established, so you have a lot of
variables,
and you don't know if the next morning it's still things are still okay, or now you have to leave, or who knows, are you out of money? And I just felt like a laser beam focusing on this, and I almost spend my last pennies on this first recording, because first we had to make the demo, and then it got picked up by Antilles.
So you were out there on a thread.
And
when you came over, was that like a green card? Is that how that?
No. I mean, that's just not that easy, especially at that time wasn't. So I could only come as a short-term visitor.
Oh, okay.
And then once I got the scholarship, then I was applying, and that was a hurdle, not necessarily on the American side, actually on the Hungarian side.
Really?
Yeah, because obviously that meant that I'm going to stay here for a year, then probably another year, and it's not a market. It wasn't a market-driven country at the time, you know, it's socialist. So they didn't see the point in it.
Yes, right. Yeah,
and the harder they made it for me, I didn't see the point going back either.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it was working against them.
Yeah, against them, and of course, life became very, very sweet for me here. Yeah. You know, artistically speaking. Financially, it took a while, but obviously, I came here for the music, and I found the music fine partners. Yeah. So I wouldn't want to go back.
A nice marriage there.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then you developed, based on your skills and your talent, you ended up becoming a full-time professor.
Right. Right.
And now, it sounds like you're in an excellent position.
Yeah,
That struggle was worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And
because the music hasn't stopped.
The music hasn't stopped, and I feel I'm growing every day. I'm coming up with current and important musical ideas, I feel. So it's not like I'm rehashing any moment in my musical career. It's every album is a new chapter.
Well, and can I ask, does having the students, the one-to-one, one-on-one, and having, high-level students,
right?
Does that help you maintain that freshness and come up with new ideas?
Very good question, because it is a very, very interesting situation. And some teachers who don't have my performing experience before starting to teach, or during or after, or whatever, they fall into traps that kind of hamper their development. But if you use that position right, then it actually helps.
Yeah, I would hope that it...
Yeah, it does help because you got to keep yourself true to your art as you teach them. And you also have to know the limits of it. So I'm not going to dissect my inspirational work for them because it defeats the purpose.
Yes, exactly.
Then, you know, you give them in pieces.
Right.
But I will be able to inspire them and give them a deeper understanding of various styles in jazz. And I can give them an impression how I grow as an artist. And both of them are helping them, I find, very much. And it also helps me as an artist without hampering me in any way.
Yeah. And I would think that because they are new students and culturally things change, so that sometimes they're bringing new material to the table or to the piano.
Yeah, but you
know, at least they've got some ideas, rough ideas.
They
maybe
do have ideas, but I always feel that since I started out playing so young, and it was always like a diary of my day, what I played that day, you know, a couple of hours of practicing, I always felt very particular and personal about what I play. So it's not like they're going to sway where I'm going, you know, with whatever they are showing.
Yeah.
But what's interesting sometimes, when somebody brings in an original composition and I help them to develop that, so you put myself into their shoes, that's a wonderful exercise for me in being a ghost writer or being a behind-the-scenes producer.
Because in that sense, you're kind of flushing out what they've got.
So it makes you aware of those pitfalls that you may not have, but it's still something that the more you are aware of, the better you get.
Exactly.
Yourself. Yeah.
But it sounds to me like that you probably won't ever need to retire.
No, we don't retire, musicians. I don't think radio personalities retire yourself either. Once you love something to this degree,
you just keep doing it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And do you feel the performing side of it will continue too, won't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I always feel that, that's my main focus. Regardless, I'm very happy that I can help my students, but I really think I can because I am a performer and especially a composer and recording artist. So by now I have like 84 compositions or arrangements of standards recorded over these 9 albums, and I will feel that they are a very unique personal take.
And they are,
I want to continue that.
We probably should listen to one or two of them. And these are, in this case, these are renditions. The ones that I had picked out just per chance happened to be a couple of Beatles tunes. And I was never a huge Beatle fan, but...
I hope I changed that.
I never disliked that. Well, I never disliked them, but I never put them on the status that...
Absolutely, and that's actually how I meant how I changed that, because I always feel that if I cover a piece, whether it's a jazz piece or a Beatles tune, it comes to me at one point during an improvisation. So it is kind of cohabiting the original composition, having a different aspect of it.
Right.
So you may like it this way, and you still don't like it in the original.
Yeah, well, it's not. I didn't dislike
Beatles,
I wasn't.
You know,
I wasn't a big
I understand
fan.
If somebody
and this, does this is. I have heard this one. I've got queued up, Eleanor Rigby.
Uh-huh.
And I have heard that, and this is a great version of it.
Thank you.
So we're going to listen to this. With me is Laszlo Gardoni, who will be appearing Saturday evening at 8 o'clock at the Buttonwood Tree with Stan Strickland. And this is celebrating the release of this CD that we're going to be hearing from, Signature Time. And the piece we're going to hear is Eleanor Rigby. So do stay tuned. You're tuned to River Valley Rhythms here at WESU in Middletown. And as I said, this is Eleanor Rigby. We'll be right back. Very nice. Yes.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful stuff. And, you know, I just read something here in these quotes. And this is a great testament. David Prince from the New Mexican, Bill Evans to the next level.
Oh,
yeah.
I appreciate that.
That's a good way to put it. So, yeah, very nice material. And this is off the newest, Signature Time, Laszlo Gordoni. And you will hear this. Now, as we were talking about, in a bit of a different situation, because it's a duo setup this Saturday rather than here, I believe it's a quartet, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Stan Strickland, who is on the album.
Yes.
He's playing saxophone on a couple of tunes and sings on one. He's going to be with me in a duo setting. And we have a special arrangement for the same material duo.
And you will be going through the
absolutely.
The whole
gonna
album.
Absolutely. We're play the whole album and a couple of tunes from earlier recordings that work very well with him. He's a multi-instrumentalist, a wonderful musician. I've been playing with him in duo and in various other groups for over 20 years. He's based in Boston. He plays saxophone, flute, bass, clarinet, wonderful vocalist, percussionist, plays the kalimba. So it does have a connection to the orchestral element in my music that he knows all that. Plus, you know, as I said, these people, him and my trio members, we are friends and we work on each other's projects. So Stan invited me for his things, and Joran just invited me to record with him his next album, my drummer, Joran Israel.
Yeah.
And we get to know each other in these various situations, so the connection is very deep.
Right.
So
because it's different leads each time, as far
that's
as
right.
whatever.
You really get to know each other.
Yeah.
Or in sideman work, like Joran, my drummer recommended me to the great David Fathead Newman for a couple of festival appearances.
Wow.
So you play with him in that situation,
with
a really unbelievable
very nice.
person who is coming right from the source. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
So all these experiences make it possible that you can rearrange your music that and keep it fresh and have a new take on it.
Actually. And that is so really that's a great thing, and it brings up a point that I think any radio programmer, any DJ doing the live music or talking about live music tries to drive home that point that live music is the best way to hear music.
Absolutely.
Because it's fresh. Mm-hmm. And it's always going to be a different and new take.
Right.
It won't be the same. If it is the same, then it's not really working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's always some freshness, some new idea that pops in at the moment and it comes through. And so I think it's going to be a wonderful, for anybody who even has the album, it's going to be a new experience to hear the duo setting.
Yeah, and that's how that's how I prepare for my recordings. Also that I write the structure, right, the melody, or in this case, the arrangement for a piece. But I always time the recording in a way that it's fresh, you know, when we do it.
Right.
So it's not like, okay, everything is already done a million times and now we record. No, it has to be fresh and things have to happen in the studio on top of what's already been predetermined.
Yes.
Then it's going to be an exciting album.
And now you say you determine where the recordings are done now. So you do these mostly in Boston, I would guess.
Actually, this one we did close to Boston in Westwood at Peter Contrimas' PBS studio. But our previous four albums, no, actually the previous two albums were recorded in New Jersey.
Oh.
At Skyline Studios.
Okay, these are places you pick, or is that?
Yeah,
yeah.
I did pick it. That one is.
And what is, why the preference?
Those were exclusively trio albums, the previous one. The previous one was titled Dig Deep, and before that it's Natural Instinct. And the material was very intricate, and also there were some really intricate reharmonizations of standards. And that place has an amazing piano, has a 9-foot Steinway that is maintained by the technician who takes care of Keith Jarrett's piano.
Oh, really?
So, you know, that guy has to be good.
Yes, yeah.
Keith would throw him out. You know,
yes.
Otherwise. And also the sound engineer is somebody I know from the 90s. We recorded an album in his New York studio when he still had one.
Oh, all right.
With Mick Goodrick and two percussionists and the bassist at Skyline Studios. Used to be on 52nd Street in New York. His name is Paul Wycliffe. Okay. So he's somebody who understands what I want.
Right.
Great engineer, and he knows how to set up a studio for
and
an
that
ideal
saves you trio. A lot of time in preparation.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you don't want to meet the person right. before you're going to record the best right. thing you ever done.
Yes, exactly. You have to have that confidence that you're going in and they know how to set things up and it's going to be done
yeah.
right.
So anyway, and yeah. before that, there was the previous album was Ever Before Ever After, and that was a live recording at WGBH on Eric Jackson's show.
Really?
So we took out the interview part between tunes, yeah. and that was an album, and it was doing great on the radio. It was number 4 on the radio
wow.
charts, as it was brand new.
And see, now that's a real testament to live music.
Exactly, yeah. exactly.
Just I mean, pulling it from an interview and playing in between on the
right, right. Yeah. It was a concert in the studio. It's, you know, I think it's concerts in Studio 4 or something. Jazz, it's in Studio 4. Right, that's the title of the program. And, you know, that's when this band first gelled, you know, on that particular concert, but that's when we realized that we had something special.
Yeah.
I mean, we had concerts, many concerts before when I'm sure it was already happening, but that was a testimony. Testimony on that. Okay, here it is. Wow. Great.
Yeah, you know, if it's working like right. that, it's got to be working.
I remember John Lockwood was coming from Turkey that day.
Really?
He was kind of jet-lagged, but didn't make a difference. You know,
no.
These guys are
probably would have the next day, though.
Yeah, you know? That's right. Good thing I got him the same day he arrived. He
was right.
In the pumped mood.
And now, I know that this one just came out, but do you have other... Are you already working on the material for the next one?
I always improvise. I continuously improvise and register these ideas in my mind and also record them. So I continuously write music. Yeah. I never stop doing it. Yeah.
Oh, it's always going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's your life. Basically, that's it. That's nice. I see also that you're a Baldwin guy.
Yeah. I have a Baldwin endorsement, which helped us out a couple of times. I played at Texas Jazz Festival.
Yeah, just to get
ago.
The piano there, right?
Yeah. They provided the piano. We played in Tennessee a couple of concerts. They provided
and
the piano.
Yeah, that's nice.
Even
plus,
in Boston.
The technician and tuners.
That's right. Cambridge River Festival, that's outdoors. You know, they provided the piano. So.
And that, I mean, when you're playing outdoors, you've got to... You've got to make sure that piano, because that can change in the weather
absolutely
quickly.
Yeah.
So,
you don't want to just go by the presenter saying, we have a piano.
Right, that's not enough. No.
Just because it's shaped like one, and there may not be one.
You know, and that's true. Actually, the Buttonwood Tree has a new piano versus the one you played before.
I like the old one, too.
The Henry Miller, that was a great piano. That was a real workhorse,
piano. Yeah, yeah.
It's now, in the home of a guest that I'm going to have here in a couple of weeks or maybe a couple of weeks from now, Michael Pestel here in Middletown and he's prepared it he's doing this kind of honorific testimonial thing, I think, for the people who passed away during 9/11. So he's prepared this piano and he's done great things, and he says that Henry Miller piano is the only piano. It's got a unique sound, and it never would have worked on any other piano. So it's nice to see it have a second life.
Like they just get better and better.
Yeah. So I hope this new piano, recycled piano, is a good one for you too. I mention again, because I'm sometimes neglectful. This is taking place. Laszlo Gardoni and Stan Strickland will be at the Buttonwood Tree this Saturday, the 10th. Of September at 8 p.m. And the Buttonwood Tree's at 605 Main Street here in Middletown. Mm-hmm. You can find out more at buttonwood.org, or you can find out more at the Arts to Go. Mm-hmm. That's arts with the numeral 2, go.org, for a complete listing of current arts events here in Middletown.
And if I may add it to it, my website is a good source as well, which is very simply lgjazz.com. So it's my initials, lgjazz.com.
Okay.
And there's a link there to my Facebook musician page, which has always very lively conversation going, and also the latest information about concerts.
And do you treat that kind of like a blog, too?
In a way, yes.
Comments and things?
I interact with my fans there, and I let them know what's going on.
So that can be reached through your website?
Yeah. Okay. There's a button on the front page.
I should mention, too, as I mentioned to you during the musical break, this information I'll put on the archive.org. The show today will be archived at archive.org. And just in the search bar, type in River Valley Rhythms, and you'll find it there. Just look for today's date or look for the master page for River Valley Rhythms, and it'll be the latest edition. And it should appear a little after 6 p.m. This evening. Yeah, and you're sure, yeah, at archive.org, absolutely, you're able to listen to it online. You can take it and download it. You can post it to another site. There's a lot of flexibility at archive.org, and it's basically all public. So that's I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, yeah. The internet makes it actually very nice to connect to people whom you wouldn't be able to otherwise. I have some wonderful fans from all over the world.
Yeah,
from
they're everywhere,
Africa,
right?
To various European countries, South America, and from here, from various parts of the country.
I'm
never
sure
went to it from the United
States. You've never been. Yeah.
So. That's a great thing.
Of course, it could also give you a reason to go.
That's right. Because
sometimes the
question is, when are you coming to
such
and such a place? Yeah.
But do you have plans like that at all? I know because of your work at Berkeley, you concentrate in the New England, New York area, and then your European trips. But do you think about that at all, traveling west or to other continents?
Albums ago, we did a lot more touring in places like Michigan, Ohio.
Okay.
Because I recorded with Jamie Haddad, a drummer,
in a
couple of albums ago. That was Behind Open Doors. That was the name of that album.
Oh, yeah, I saw
and,
that.
We played with him there before, so they invited us back because the album came out. So we played in Ohio, Michigan. Also, as I mentioned, Tennessee was a very interesting thing.
Right, yeah. And you did say Texas, too, right?
And Texas. So there are these. And I used to tour in California. Maybe that's something I'm not doing as much, because to take out the whole quartet or even the trio would be...
Right, because you're all East Coast based.
Yeah, but actually there were a couple of great concerts there. One of them was the Monterey Jazz Festival.
Oh.
And then they paid for everything, you know, the whole band could go.
Very nice.
Many years ago, and...
And that's a great, that's the West Coast Newport Jazz Festival, basically.
That's right. So, yeah, we might do that again, and I certainly have that on my mind.
Oh, okay, good. And how about other continents? I mean, because you had mentioned people from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever think to go maybe to different continents besides Europe and this America?
You know, I did go to Japan. I did play in Tokyo.
There's a big jazz following
there. There was like a huge concert, and it was a very nice experience.
Yeah.
So I actually thinking about that again, to go back there.
That's right. Japan does have a good following for jazz.
Hopefully now, you know, they consolidated the situation.
Right.
What's going on.
Yeah, I know it's still
tragic.
Difficult. And,
very
difficult here now, too. Weather is something else.
Yeah.
I'd like to, if we can, do one more cut. We're
absolutely
almost out of time, but I'd like to have people hear another cut.
Of course.
Now, I had thought to do Lady Madonna, but is there an original on here that you would like to have people hear?
Sure. Let's do maybe Bourbon Street Boogie, because that also has Stan Strickland on saxophone.
Oh, yeah. All right. Let me just get that queued up. And this is Bourbon Street Boogie, and this will feature Stan Strickland on.
Oh, saxophone.
And he will be here with Laszlo on Saturday at the Buttonwood Tree. So let's give a listen to this, and then we'll be back to wrap things up with Laszlo Gardoni. And you are tuned to WESU in Middletown. All right. That is Bourbon Street Boogie from Signature Time, Laszlo Gardoni, John Lockwood. You're on Israel and Stan Strickland, and that work by Stan on that cut was excellent.
Yeah.
So that's good that everyone got a chance to hear that.
Absolutely. And on my website, there is a music page where everybody can go and listen to full tracks from the various previous albums.
Oh,
and
really?
Longer clips from this one, not the entire tune from these, but long clips. And that's lgjazz.com again.
Yeah.
And just click on the music tab, and there's a Laszlo Gardoni radio going.
Very good. That's excellent. And Laszlo will be appearing with Stan Strickland promoting the new CD, Signature Time, at the Buttonwood Tree Saturday night, beginning at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, looking forward to returning.
Yeah, it should be
last time it was solo piano. I remember
you invited
me there when my first Sunnyside CD came out, Changing Standards, solo piano.
And then here we're back again, and it's nice to have you here on
Thank
WESU.
You.